Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Arr, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Your child has so much potential, but your local schools may not be right for them. Check out K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited tuition-free online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
Pleasant Grove Police.
I just found something in my garage. It's been wrapped up in a plastic bag and it stinks.
Okay, what is it?
It's a little baby.
My two daughters live here. See, we've been cleaning the garage.
Okay.
And got a 48-hour pass, and I have...
Yes. We went on home and my dad's in a halfway house.
I'm trying to get, because I've been gone for so long.
Anyway, there was a box over there. It was all wrapped up. And he says, what is...
A mother of three, living in a quiet suburban neighborhood, secretly hid a horrifying truth for over a decade. 7 newborn babies, wrapped and sealed in boxes, left in the garage as if they never existed. Was Megan Huntsman a victim of addiction? Or a cold-blooded murderer? This chilling story uncovers never-before-told details, fatal oversights in the justice system, and the terrifying silence of those around her. Don't forget to subscribe to our channel to uncover exclusive true crime investigations and receive special perks from us.
After serving 9 years in prison for drug-related charges, Darren West quietly returned to his old home in Pleasant Grove, Utah. The house had stood silent for over a decade. Weeds had overtaken the front steps. Dust blanketed the windows. Time itself seemed to have abandoned this place. Darren wasn't back to reclaim a life, only to clean up the remnants of one. What he didn't know was that this return would unlock the door to one of the most chilling criminal cases in American history. As he stepped into the garage space, once filled with garden tools, broken bikes, and cardboard boxes of foul odor, struck him immediately. This wasn't mold or mildew. It was something heavier, something sinister that lingered in the air. While sorting through the clutter, Darren's eyes fell upon a strange box tightly sealed with black duct tape and multiple layers of plastic wrap. It looked deliberately hidden, as if someone had desperately tried to keep the contents from ever being discovered. His hands trembled as he reached for it, and the moment he peeled back the first layer, his heart nearly stopped.
Pleasant Grove Police.
Oh, yes, ma'am. Can I have an officer come to this address?
And your name?
My name's Darren West. I just found something in my garage. I think it's a miscarriage.
Do
Can you be more specific? What do you mean by a miscarriage you found?
I have no idea. Just please send an officer up here.
It sounds like you may need medical.
It's been wrapped up in a plastic bag and it stinks.
Okay, what is it?
It's a little baby.
He staggered back, dropping the box to the floor, and in a panic, grabbed his phone to dial 911. His voice was shaky, almost broken, as he forced the words out. I just found it might be the body of a baby. On the other end, the dispatcher fell silent for a moment, before swiftly instructing him to stay on the line and dispatched officers to the scene. When police arrived, Darren stood frozen in front of the garages, face pale, drained of all color. He looked like a man whose soul had been hollowed out. What he had just uncovered was only the tip of the iceberg, and the case that would soon unfold was one that would send shockwaves across the nation.
Just minutes after the 911 call, Pleasant Grove police arrived at the scene. From the outside, the house appeared quiet, no signs of forced entry, no unusual sounds. But as they approached the garage, where Darren stood frozen like a statue, a thick, unmistakable stench struck them like a wave. It was the smell of death, heavy and suffocating. This was no routine check. Something unspeakable was waiting inside. The garage door creaked open, letting daylight spill into the space. Though the light did nothing to warm the chilling scene, inside, cardboard boxes were stacked from floor to near ceiling. Each one sealed tightly with layers of black duct tape. No labels, no markings, nothing to suggest these were ordinary storage containers. A young officer cautiously reached out, placing his hand on one of the mitt was ice cold, unnaturally heavy, and disturbingly silent. "What the hell is in these?" someone whispered, but no one answered. No one dared to, because deep down, each of them already sensed that whatever lay inside those boxes was beyond imagination. A forensic unit was immediately summoned, the entire area was sealed off, and all eyes were now fixed on the lifeless Boxesilent, still, yet radiating a chilling sense of dread. None of them could have anticipated what they were about to uncover, a case that had quietly unfolded over the course of a decade. A string of crimes committed in silence, in plain sight, hidden in a suburban garage. No screams, no blood, just boxes, and the deadly silence that surrounded them like a curse, waiting to be revealed. As the boxes began to be opened, what lay inside left even the most seasoned officers in stunned silence. There was no longer any doubt this wasn't an accident, but a string of horrific crimes stretching over years. And one name quickly surfaced in every report: Megan Huntsman. She was Darren West's wife, the woman who had lived in the house during the years he was in prison. No one else could possibly explain why those boxes existed except Megan. Detectives began combing through records and old reports. That's when a chilling detail emerged. During multiple summers in the past, neighbors had called police complaining about a strong, foul odor coming from Megan's garage. But when officers arrived, the house was locked, no one answered, and without a search warrant, they left. That call, if handled differently, might have unearthed the truth years earlier. Now, Megan wasn't just a name in the investigation, she was the focus of it. A mother of three, living in a quiet suburban neighborhood, all while carrying a secret darker than anyone could have imagined. Inside the West Valley Police interrogation room, Megan Huntsman sat across from Detective Beckstrom. Her face was pale, her eyes blank, and her hands clenched tightly in her lappas, if holding on to the last thread of composure she had left. When asked about the box found in the garage, Megan spoke in a tired, distant voice. "It was a stillbirth, a long time ago. I was scared, so I didn't tell anyone." The detective didn't press. He let her talk, watching as she slowly unraveled in her own contradictions. Megan said she had terrible cramps, went into the bathroom, and the baby just came out. She didn't call an ambulance, didn't tell her family. She simply wrapped the baby up and placed it in a box. "I didn't know what to do. I panicked," she muttered, but her story didn't flow. When asked what year it happened, she hesitated, changing her answer more than once. When questioned whether the baby had been breathing, her response was vague. "I'm not sure. Maybe. But then again, Maybe not. Every answer Megan gave only raised more questions. It seemed as though she was trying to piece together a story even she couldn't fully recall or didn't want to. Strangely, throughout the entire interview, Megan never shed a single tear. There was no visible pain, no emotional breakdown, just a stream of dry, disconnected confessions, as if recounting something that had nothing to do with her. And that emptiness in her expression unsettled the investigators more than anything else. Because it wasn't just that Megan was hiding the truth, she seemed disturbingly used to it. After hours of vague, emotionless responses, Megan finally began to reveal the darker truth. Her voice faltered, eyes fixed on the empty space in front of her as she admitted, "I was using drugs. A lot. Meth, heroin, Xanax. I couldn't feel anything clearly anymore." When asked specifically about the birth of the first baby, Megan explained, "I was home alone. The kids were at school. I had severe cramps. I went into the bathroom, sat down, and the baby came out. There was no doctor, no emergency call, no one around to witness what happened. Megan simply sat there, holding the newborn in silence. No cries, no heartbeat anyone could confirm. I was scared," she said quietly. "I didn't want anyone to know I was pregnant." Then she wrapped the tiny body in an old towel, placed it into a plastic bag, then into a cardboard box, and pushed it deep into the garage. It wasn't panic. It was methodical cold, deliberate. Investigators asked, "So no one in the neighborhood noticed you were pregnant?" Megan shook her head. But the truth wasn't that simple. A nurse who lived just 3 houses away once suspected something. She remembered Megan's belly noticeably growing at one point. When asked, Megan had laughed it off, said she was just gaining weight. But what struck the nurse as odd was what followed. Just weeks later, Megan's belly had shrunk dramatically. No baby, no crying, no ambulance, no signs of a newborn like in any other home with a new mother. The nurse felt something was off, but then, like everyone else, moved on. At this point, detectives realized the stillbirth story was nothing more than a thin layer of deception. The reality.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Was far darker. A drug-addicted mother living in a quiet neighborhood, secretly giving birth and ending the lives of her own newborns in utter silence. While Megan was still being interrogated at the police station, investigators at the Pleasant Grove home continued to search the garage. They had no idea what they were about to uncover. When the second box was pulled from a hidden corner behind an old wooden cabinet, the stench hit immediately thick, foul, and unforgettable. Just like the first, it was tightly wrapped in multiple layers of duct tape and plastic, as if someone had desperately tried to seal away a terrible secret forever. Forensic officers carefully peeled back the layers. Inside was another infant's body this time, further wrapped in an old blanket and mosquito netting. No one said a word. They all understood. This wasn't an isolated tragedy. This was a pattern. A formula, and the person behind it was Megan Huntsman. Minutes later, a third box was discovered, this time beneath a pile of dusty garden tools long forgotten. Again came the putrid smell, again the tiny remains. Each box felt like a blow to the chest. The officers realized they weren't just inside a garage, they were standing in an invisible cemetery, created by a mother's own hands. When Detective Beckstrom returned to the interrogation room and told Megan they had found two more bodies, she didn't react like an innocent woman would. Instead, she simply nodded and looked at the floor. "There are more," she whispered. "I don't remember exactly. Maybe 7. The detective froze. "You were pregnant 7 times? "Maybe 8. I didn't keep track. Back then, I just wanted it all to go away." Megan confessed that over nearly a decade, she had become pregnant, again and again, never once seeing a doctor, never once telling anyone. Each birth happened in silence. In the bathroom, in the bedroom, once even on the kitchen floor. And every time, she followed the same grim ritual. Wrap the baby in a towel, seal it in a plastic bag, place it in a box, and hide it in the dark. "No one knew?" the detective asked, still in disbelief. "No one," Megan answered. "I knew how to hide it. I wore loose clothes, I avoided eye contact, and most importantly, I never let anyone get too close." When asked why she never went to a hospital or even a free clinic, Megan shrugged. "I was addicted. I didn't want anyone to see me like that. I was ashamed, and I hated myself." That chilling confession cut deep into the hearts of everyone listening. This was no longer a question of one stillbirth. Police were now confronting a serial pattern of newborn deaths carried out by the very woman who gave them life. And strangely, when Megan spoke of her children, her own flesh and blood, she didn't shed a single tear. No apology, no justification, just a woman, slowly unsealing the secrets she had hidden for nearly 18 years, with boxes, with silence, and with death. Inside the cold, sterile interrogation room, Detective Beckstrom returned, this time carrying a thick file in his hands. No more circling around. Now, it was about evidence. He placed the file on the table, flipping through each page photos of the remains, autopsy reports, and, on top, the DNA results. "They're all your children," he said slowly, his eyes fixed on Megan. "And their father is Darren West." Megan stayed silent. The pause in the room stretched endlessly, broken only by the faint hum of the recorder. Eventually, she looked up, her voice barely audible. "I don't remember how many there were." Beckstrom's brow furrowed. "You don't remember? What do you mean? You gave birth to them. You placed them in those boxes. You hid them in your garage and now you're saying you don't remember?" Megan nodded. "I know it sounds horrible, but I was on so many drugs back then. I couldn't keep track of time. Everything just blurred together." The explanation hung in the air, heavy and suffocating. Beckstrom knew the truth was slowly surfacing, but if he wanted to reach the heart of this darkness, he had to dig deeper. He pulled out a transcript testimony from one of Megan's former close friends. "She told us that you once said, 'I hate being a mother. I hate being tied down.' Does that sound familiar?" Megan didn't respond. She didn't deny it, but she didn't confirm it either. Yet for the first time, something flickered in her eyes. A quiet admission, without words. A shadow of guilt, or perhaps just recognition.
Your child has so much potential, but your local schools may not be right for them. Check out K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited tuition-free online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
"Did you ever love them?" the detective asked. Megan gave a faint, hollow laugh. "I think I did, at one point. But life got so chaotic, I couldn't hold myself together, let alone hold a child." Those words shattered whatever fragile veil had remained around Megan's actions. She wasn't just a victim of circumstance. She was someone who made choices, who chose silence, secrecy, and ultimately, death. Not once, but over and over, for nearly a decade. Police now had more than proof of murder, they had a motive. This wasn't panic, it wasn't desperation. It was willful rejection of motherhood, of responsibility, and of basic human compassion. And as Megan sat there, drifting through the wreckage of her own memories, investigators realized this case ran far deeper than they had imagined. This wasn't just a crime, it was a tragedy repeated in coldness, in silence, and in utter detachment. A tragedy named motherhood. In the early minutes of questioning, Megan clung tightly to her stillbirth story like a last lifeline in a sea of mounting suspicion. She insisted the babies were born lifeless, that she heard no crying, saw no movement, and simply wrapped them up in panic. But the deeper the interrogation went, the more her contradictions surfaced, until eventually, Megan began unraveling her own lie. "Actually," she began, her voice hoarse as if choking back every word, "I think a few of them might have been alive for a couple of minutes." The room fell silent. Detective Beckstrom didn't respond immediately. Instead, he quietly laid out a series of photos collected from the scene, close-up shots of the boxes, each one sealed meticulously, with layers of duct tape, wrapped in plastic bags, and even covered with towels or blankets. It was all systematic, carefully prepared, repeated like a ritual. There were no signs of confusion, no traces of panic, only the chilling quiet of someone who knew exactly what they were doing. "How many layers did you wrap them in?" Beckstrom asked, his tone colder than before. Megan didn't answer. Her head hung low, hands clenched so tightly her knuckles turned white. He continued calmer this time, but with a haunting precision. "If you truly believe the baby was stillborn, then why all the layers? Why seal the box so tightly like you were terrified someone might discover what you'd done?" Megan trembled. She had no answer. Or perhaps she did, but couldn't bring herself to say it aloud. Because the moment she admitted those babies had been alive, even briefly, this would no longer be a tragic accident. It would be murder. A decision. A deliberate act. The detective pulled out a forensic report, pointing to specific notations. "We found biological fluid inside the plastic bag in the third box. It could be amniotic fluid or blood. But that tells us the time between birth and concealment was short, far too short for you not to know if the baby had a heartbeat." Megan gasped. Her chest rose and fell rapidly, and for the first time, her eyes welled with tears. Gone was the numb, emotionless woman from earlier. For the first time, she seemed to feel the weight of her actions, but it was far too late. The investigators no longer saw her as a broken mother. To them, Megan Huntsman had become a serial killer, a woman who smothered the lives of her own newborns, wrapped them like forbidden cargo, and hid them away for years. No cries, no pleas for help. And all of it carried out in silence, repeated as if trapped in a nightmare that never ended. As the minutes quietly passed, the air in the interrogation room grew heavier with each breath. Megan Huntsman sat hunched over, her hair falling across her face, her voice barely a whisper. "There was one time," she began, "I heard something, like a cry, very faint. It moved a little." Detective Beckstrom didn't blink. "And what did you do?" Megan was silent for a long moment before exhaling shakily. I tried something. I remembered seeing people on TV wipe a baby's mouth after birth. So I did that. I used a towel to clean it, then put my ear close. But I didn't hear anything else. I thought it was too late." Her voice trembled not from emotion, but from a battle raging inside her. On one side was a mother's instinct. On the other, the emotional numbness brought on by years of drug abuse and despair. It was the only time Megan claimed she tried to save one of the babies. And yet rather than call 911 or seek help, she followed the same chilling pattern. Wrap the baby in a towel, seal it in a plastic bag, and place it in a box. "What were you trying to do, Megan?" Beckstrom asked, this time with a softer tone, as if speaking to a mind unraveling before him. "Did you want to save it, or just make sure it was dead?" The question seemed to freeze Megan in place. She didn't answer. Her hands began to tremble, scratching at the fabric of the chair, like she was desperately searching for something solid to hold on to amidst the chaos in her mind. A few tears finally slipped down her cheek, but they didn't seem to carry remorse. Only the weight of a psychological war long lost. Investigators realized that her attempt at resuscitation wasn't evidence of compassion. It was proof of deep internal conflict. Megan wasn't completely detached from reality. She knew what she was doing. She felt the life in her arms, and in that moment, she stood between two choices but still allowed her selfish instinct for self-preservation to prevail. There was no excuse that could mask that. A mother who hears her baby cry, who feels the warmth of life on fragile skin, and still seals it in a box, cannot be called unaware. Detectives quietly recorded her every word, every flicker of emotion. Megan's actions were not the result of a momentary psychotic break, they were conscious decisions. Each towel, each layer of plastic, each sealed cardboard box was a lie crafted to hide the unforgivable. By the time the clock marked the 19th minute of the interrogation, one truth had become undeniable. Megan hadn't simply killed her children. She had wrestled with herself, time and again. And every time, the darkness inside her won. While the interrogation continued inside the police station, outside the Pleasant Grove home, a line of police and forensic vehicles filled the quiet suburban street. A heavy silence hung over the neighborhood. Investigators in hazmat suits combed every corner of the garage like they were digging through a hidden cemetery. And then, the fourth box was pulled out. Then the fifth. The sixth. Each new discovery sent another wave of nausea through the team. No one was counting anymore. They weren't dealing with bodies, they were facing a sequence of deaths. One by one. Silent, abandoned, and forgotten. Officers carefully carried out each tiny body, each time carving deeper into the hearts of those watching. A young officer, barely a year on the force, broke down in tears at the scene. Not out of fear, but because he couldn't understand how a mother could repeat the same horror six times without anyone noticing. Back at the station, when Megan was informed that six more remains had been discovered, she sat in silence. After a long pause, she murmured to herself, barely audible, "Maybe 8 or 9. I don't remember." The words froze the room. The detectives didn't need to press further. They knew now the nightmare was still unfolding. By then, the case had hit the media. News outlets lit up with shocking headlines. Mother killed 7 infants. Hid bodies in garage for 10 years. Utah's most disturbing crime. The story spread rapidly across television, radio, and social media. Locals gathered outside in small groups, whispering, horrified. No one could believe this had happened on their street, a place they once thought was peaceful, ordinary. One neighbor, eyes swollen with tears, told reporters, "I used to bring her baked goods. I heard strange noises some nights, but thought it was just cats." Police erected barriers to keep the growing crowd at bay and preserve the scene, but nothing could contain the wave of outrage and shock spreading like wildfire. This was no longer just a criminal investigation. It had become a symbol of something much more terrifying. The deadly silence that can exist behind closed doors, where pain and death are hidden beneath the mask of a normal family home. And at the center of it all, was that woman, Megan Huntsman. No more tears, no more excuses, no more places to hide, only a trail of tiny bodies and the darkness she left behind. While the media exploded with updates on the horrific discoveries, another key figure stepped into the interrogation room at the police station. Darren West, Megan's ex-husband and the man who first uncovered the fateful box in the garage. He sat across from Detective Beckstrom, looking exhausted and visibly shaken. Even with everything out in the open, Darren still didn't seem to fully grasp what had just happened in his own life. "You lived with her for nearly 10 years," Beckstrom began calmly. "And you're saying you had no idea she was ever pregnant?" Darren nodded. "I swear, I didn't know a thing. Megan always wore loose clothes. She'd say it was weight gain from medication. I never once saw her with a big belly." At one point, I even thought she had a hormonal issue. The detective glanced down at the DNA reports. 7 children, all of them biologically Darren's. You're their father, he said plainly. And you didn't notice a single one? Darren let out a long sigh and buried his head in his hands. No, I wasn't there when she gave birth. I worked long hours, then went to prison. When I got out, she told me she had miscarried once. I believed her. I never imagined this. Beckstrom still wasn't convinced. The bodies had been carefully wrapped and hidden in the garage space Darren had access to. How could he not notice? How could he never once be curious about those boxes? But then, the evidence started speaking for itself. There was no trace of Darren's DNA on any of the boxes. No fingerprints, no hair, not a single cell linked to him inside the plastic wrappings. Every piece of forensic evidence pointed to one person, Megan. She hid everything, Darren muttered almost to himself. She never let me touch those boxes. She said they were old things from her mom. Told me to leave them alone. Beckstrom took notes. Deep down, he hadn't completely ruled Darren out, but the evidence doesn't land under the law. The absence of proof carries more weight than suspicion alone. After a few hours, Darren walked out of the interrogation room, no handcuffs, no charges, but his steps were heavier than any criminal's. Because now, he wasn't just a witness. He was the father of 7 dead children and the last person to uncover the horrific truth buried inside his own home. As the 3rd hour of interrogation began, Megan Huntsman finally let go of her last defenses. Her voice was hoarse. There was no energy left to deny, no excuse left to offer. I hid them all for 10 years, she admitted. No one knew. Darren didn't know. The kids didn't know. Only me. She recounted each birth with unsettling clarity, as if reading from a script permanently etched in her memory. Every instance was carefully planned. The timing, the location, the supplies, old towels, plastic bags, black duct tape, a cardboard fruit box, all of it stashed away in a small cabinet in the corner of the house. After giving birth, she would follow the same grim routine. Clean the newborn, wrap it in multiple layers, place it in the box, seal it tightly, and push it into the farthest, darkest corner of the garage. He never asked, Megan said when questioned about Darren. I always told him it was just old stuff from my mom. I told him not to touch it, and he didn't.
What was even more disturbing was how she described life after each concealment. She went grocery shopping, cared for her surviving children, cooked dinner. That small home, seemingly normal, hid a silent graveyard just beyond the garage door. Megan called it my place to keep secrets. She wasn't afraid of being caught. In fact, with every successful cover-up, she felt something else. Control. But what truly unnerved investigators wasn't just Megan's confession. It was something buried in old department records, a chilling detail that came to light during the case review. Years earlier, during a particularly hot summer, a police officer had responded to a neighbor's call reporting a foul smell coming from Megan's garage. The officer's report stated clearly, odor similar to decomposing animal coming from the garage area. Yet, without a search warrant and lacking further cause, his superior had instructed him to close the case. It was filed away and forgotten. If they had entered the garage that day, if even one box had been opened, everything might have stopped. But that moment of institutional hesitation, that brief, dismissive decision gave Megan the silence she needed to continue. No one ever suspected me, Megan said quietly, almost in disbelief. No one thinks a mother could do something like that. Detective Beckstrom said nothing. He knew she was right. Megan hadn't hidden the bodies in some remote place. She didn't flee, didn't plead insanity, didn't disappear. She lived among everyone, while storing the remains of 7 of her own children behind the door of a garage no one questioned. That truth revealed more than the crimes of one woman. It exposed a devastating flaw in the very structure meant to prevent such horrors of failure of community, of oversight, of human attention. Because sometimes, evil doesn't need to be cunning. It only needs to be quiet. And Megan was exactly that. The DNA results arrived in a thick envelope marked urgent priority. Investigators weren't surprised by what was inside, but with the findings now confirmed through hard forensic evidence, every remaining doubt was put to rest. All 7 babies, without exception, were the biological children of Darren West. Darren, the ex-husband, who had shared a home with Megan for nearly a decade, who never once knew of their existence and now had to confront a devastating truth. He was the father of 7 children who had died inside his own house, without his knowledge. Meanwhile, Megan Huntsman was officially charged with 6 counts of first-degree murder. One of the 7 infants was determined to have been stillborn, with no signs of postnatal trauma. But the remaining 6, according to forensic pathologists, showed evidence of life after birth. In legal terms, that was more than enough to constitute murder. And so, Megan Anse, perceived as an ordinary mother of 3 in the eyes of her neighbors, was unmasked for what she truly was: a serial killer hidden behind a facade of domestic quiet. On the day of the trial, Megan walked into the courtroom with an eerily calm demeanor. No tears, no protest. When asked to explain her motive, she responded flatly, "I couldn't control myself. The drugs clouded my mind." The words chilled the room. No apology, no breakdown, no deeper insight. Prosecutors attempted to probe her state of mind, to uncover any trace of remorse or explanation, but every door remained shut. Megan offered nothing more. She didn't deny. She didn't beg. She simply accepted. As if the verdict had already been handed down the moment those boxes were first discovered in the garage. Outside the courthouse, crowds gathered to witness the trial. Some cried. Some raged. Others stood in stunned silence, gripping newspapers emblazoned with Megan's face in the bold headline. "Mother killed 6 infants, hid the bodies for a decade." The case closed with the harshest sentence Utah law could impose. But for many, especially parents, justice would never be enough. Because what haunted them wasn't just the number of victims. It was the manner in which they died. In silence. In darkness. At the hands of the very woman who gave them life. And even in the final moments, no one truly understood why. After weeks of forensic examination, the final report was delivered during a closed meeting between investigators, prosecutors, and leading forensic experts. The contents were brief, but each line cut deep into any lingering belief that this might have been a tragic but unintentional series of events. At least 4 of the 6 babies had been born alive. One showed signs of retained lung fluid, a clear indicator the baby had taken breaths. Another had blood clots in the lungs, evidence of suffocation while breathing. 2 more had umbilical cords that had begun to contract, proof that their hearts were beating after delivery. The forensic team's conclusion was clear. These were not stillbirths, nor were they the result of postpartum psychosis. There was no evidence of acute mental breakdown. No signs that Megan had lost control in the moments after birth. Every action, from wiping the babies clean, wrapping them tightly in layers of fabric and plastic, sealing them with duct tape, and hiding them in the garage, demonstrated clarity, planning, and full awareness. Their statement was blunt. These were deliberate acts, carried out sequentially, with no indication of instinctual panic or impaired judgment. That meant every justification Megan had given, claims of not remembering or being controlled by drugs, no longer held weight. She knew what she was doing. And she chose to do it not once, but 6 times. With a cold composure that only those who have faced death and no longer fear it could possibly possess. On the day of sentencing, the courtroom fell into a heavy silence. There were no more arguments, no more doubts. When the judge rose and spoke, his voice echoed with finality. Megan Huntsman was sentenced to 6 consecutive life sentences. No parole, no leniency, no chance of release. One life sentence would have been enough to ensure she'd never see freedom again. But 6, served back to back, slammed every door shut permanently. It wasn't just punishment, it was a statement. The lives she stole would not be forgotten. As the sentence was read, Megan didn't cry. She simply nodded, quietly, as if she had accepted her fate long ago.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90 exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair has got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Your child has so much potential, but your local schools may not be right for them. Check out K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited tuition-free online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
Behind her, Darren West sat with his head bowed, eyes red. The man who once shared a home with her now watched in silence as the woman he once loved was led away into darkness. And therein, cold concrete prison somewhere in the Utah desert, Megan Huntsman will live out the rest of her days. Alone, never forgiven, never coming back. After the sentencing, the investigation didn't end. A special task force was assembled with a singular purpose: to trace every address Megan Huntsman had ever lived, at stretching back to her teenage years, long before she moved to Pleasant Grove. Authorities no longer trusted her word, and after everything that had surfaced, no possibility, no matter how horrifying, could be dismissed. An emergency search warrant was issued for an old home in Springville, where Megan had once lived with her family during the early years of her marriage. The garage, the shed, even the backyard were thoroughly searched. Ground-penetrating radar, cadaver dogs, scent analysis equipment, every modern tool was deployed. Officers dug, scanned, and sifted through the earth as if peeling back the memories of someone who had hidden in darkness for far too long. Former neighbors gathered behind barricades, quietly watching. Each of them carried a silent fear that there might be more children never born into the world, never laid to rest. But after days of intense searching, investigators made a final announcement. No additional remains had been found. No signs of further hidden deaths. For the first time in weeks, authorities could close part of this case without adding new names to the list of the lost. It was a faint glimmer of relief in the suffocating shadow Megan Huntsman had left behind. A quiet, necessary punctuation to a chapter that had seemed endless in its darkness. And with that conclusion, the case was finally laid to rest, not with forgiveness, but with vigilance. Because some crimes are only discovered when it's already too late, if no one dares to look closer. The case closed with a heavy sentence, but one final question still lingers in the shadows of every report. Was Megan Huntsman a broken mother, destroyed by drugs and despair? A cold-blooded killer with an empty heart? There is no answer that fully satisfies. For 10 years, she became pregnant 7 times, gave birth 7 times, and hid 7 bodies in the same home, in a quiet suburban neighborhood, without a single person noticing. No cries, no blood, no suspicion. This story shook America not just because of the horrifying numbers, but because of its deadly silence. A tragedy that unfolded slowly, quietly, like the still boxes stacked in her garage. And to this day, no one can fully explain how one woman managed to conceal 7 pregnancies, 7 births, and 7 deaths, while the world around her remained completely unaware. Perhaps that's the most terrifying part of all.